Sin Media acknowledges and pays respects to the people of the Woiwurrung and Bunurong language groups of the Eastern Kulin Nations, on whose unceded lands the Sin Studio stands. Sin extends their respects to the traditional custodians and peoples of the lands and waters our content reaches. It always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
The views of and opinions expressed in this podcast are solely those of young people hosting the podcast, and we do not intend to speak on behalf of any organisation. Any content produced is of our own opinion and are not endorsed by any affiliated organisations.
Welcome back to all our avid listeners out there. We know that our first podcast episode was quite interesting, so we came back for one final recording, and hopefully all our fans out there are not too disappointed in our departure from the airways. So hi, I'm Bridget, I'm 18 years old, I'm from Maribyrnong, I'm currently in year 12 of high school, I'm a swim teacher and I like scuba diving and sailing.
Hi everyone, I'm Ed. I was born and raised in Maribyrnong. I'm currently a university student. I'm studying a Bachelor of Commerce doing finance and management. For fun, I like to play basketball, do a bit of graphic design, and hang out with my friends. And for work, I'm also an intern at an engineering company.
Hi, I'm Phoebe. I'm 22 years old and I recently graduated from university with a Bachelor of Arts in Politics and International Studies. I'm now working full-time in a related field and have been since April of this year. Like Ed and Bridget, I'm also born and raised in the western suburbs. And outside of work, I like to try a lot of different food places and a lot of different cafes for matcha in particular. And I also am an avid binge watcher of many TV shows.
And today we're joined with Suhoor. Can you please give us a bit of an introduction about yourself?
Yeah, hello everyone. My name's Suhoor. I am a psych nurse, so I have been a nurse for coming up to 6 years now. So I spent the first 3 years of my career working as a general nurse. So I worked across surgical, medical, as well as pediatric wards. And then I switched over to psych nursing, where I went back to uni and completed my postgrad, just specialising in that area. And yeah, I've just been working in that area since then.
Awesome. Thank you for that. We really appreciate you taking the time out of your day, out of your busy schedule to join us, to talk to us. But I guess we'll kick it off with Phoebe.
Yeah. So to start things off lightly, we just wanted to find out what your thoughts are on the ways a popular TV show or a movie addresses mental health and portrays it.
Yeah, so good question. So I was like thinking about this, and who I can think about is Queen Charlotte. Do any of you guys watch Bridgerton?
Yes.
Yep. Yep. So King George specifically, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but from the way I interpreted it watching it is that he has bipolar as well as psychotic features. And I think that the way they portrayed his mental illness was a little bit incorrect, where, you know, he would just have constant twitches. And as a psych nurse, when we have patients who present with this symptomology, they don't twitch the way he was twitching. And with the treatment, I think it's just because it's from back in the days, they would hit him. That's just not the way we deal with people, and that's not the way we treat people. So I thought that was quite interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really insightful to learn, especially as someone who's watched the show and knowing a lot of other people who've watched the show, and they don't really talk about what is accurate or not accurate. They just talk about, I guess, the romance side of things. It's really interesting to find out what potential diagnosis that would be, especially because they don't really say any names of conditions in the show, if I'm remembering correctly.
No, they didn't, but I was actually so curious about it, so I jumped on Reddit, which probably isn't the best place, but you know, based off, you know, his hallucinations and stuff, I definitely thought there was definitely a psychotic element to it. So just as a psych nurse, I was very curious, so I did jump on Reddit, so probably not the most accurate information, but yeah.
Cool. And I guess, why did you want to work in the mental health sector?
So like I said, I was a general nurse for 3 years, and you know, coming into work, I remember feeling anxious every shift, and I think that might tie into, you know, being a junior nurse and, you know, having a lot of tasks and a lot of things to do, and just overall, it being quite task oriented. So it was very much like 6 o'clock, you got Panadol, 8 o'clock, you've got to put up IV antibiotics. And with a lot of the patients, even though they were physically unwell, there's also like a mental component to it. Like, for example, if you break your leg, that has like a significant effect on your mental health. And a lot of these patients, wanted to have, those conversations. And unfortunately, as a general nurse, we weren't able to sit down with patients and talk about their mental health because it was so busy and there was so much to do. And then lockdown came around and two of my good mates who I graduated with went into psych nursing and they were raving about it. They were like, oh my God, you have to come, you have to do it. It's so good. You're valued as an individual. It's quite collaborative. They were just raving about it. And that's when I just was... Yeah, general nursing just wasn't for me. I think there was a calling in another place, and that's when I just applied to mental health nursing. And the job that I'm in now is the job that I'm still in from when I applied. It's been really good, and it's been a huge curveball because it is super different to what I was doing as a general nurse. Yeah.
Could you explain your average day in the life working as a psych nurse?
Yeah, so basically we come into work, we do handover, so we sit around the table and we sort of give a brief handover of what's happening with the patients, what's sort of needed for that day, and then after that we generally make calls. So I just wanted to clarify, I am a community nurse, so we go out to people's houses. So a lot of the young people we see have been discharged from hospital, so they've either had an admission for a mental health episode and then they were discharged, so we are sort of like a step down. So we go out to people's houses. So we give calls. We basically bring the hospital to their home. So we do bloods in their home. We give them medications in their home. We engage in a lot of therapeutic interventions, such as like behavioral activation. There's just so much things we do for them. Yeah. Mm.
So based on your notable experiences within, the hospitals or the community, what are some consequences or effects of mental health stigma in young people?
Yeah, so I work with a lot of young people between the ages of 15 to 25. So a lot of young people are going through developmental changes, as well as within this age group, a lot of people put a huge emphasis on socializing as well as friendships and peers. And so what comes with that is, a lot of people want to go out, have fun, socialize. And so unfortunately, a lot of our young people do experiment with recreational substances to, cope or to socialize. And unfortunately, that could bring about a psychotic episode. And unfortunately, everyone has different genetics, so some people do have a greater susceptibility to developing a psychotic episode, and so their mate who they're using substances with might not experience a mental health episode, but they will.
Yeah, and I guess that is a very prominent thing. As someone who graduated high school 4 years ago and is in university, I did see some people engaging in those substances. I think speaking from my own experiences as well, I think mental health wasn't really a huge thing in my culture as well. I kind of found out about it a couple of years ago rather than, learning about it as a young person. Is that also the same case for you as well, growing up, in this community as well? Did your family really talk about mental health?
Yeah, no. So definitely, it's definitely not a thing in my community. People look at you and think, you're crazy, or also there's a religious tie to it. So I know with some of our young people who come from Christian sort of backgrounds, some of their parents believe that they need an exorcism. Mm-hmm. And then with some Muslim families, they believe that it could be possession. And so I think it's about also respecting their cultural understanding of what mental illness is. So there's that aspect of it also. Yeah.
But
it's definitely not accepted or talked about in my culture.
And what resources or help should be available to help think these kind of issues from being escalated?
Yeah, I think education. So a lot of people don't know that using substances can bring about a lot of problems. They use it because they think, they socialize and helps them relax. And, unfortunately, a lot of people don't know the consequences some of these substances have on young people and their mental health. So what I would recommend is education. So just education within school, making sure the students are aware that, if you use substances, there will be consequences to that. Just education all around and just normalizing it.
Yeah, and moving on to the next segment, in regards to ensuring that mental health care is accessible, and touching on that point we discussed earlier about the cultural stigma that does exist when addressing mental health in different cultures and backgrounds, we wanted to ask you why you think cultural appropriateness within the mental health space is so important.
Yeah. So it's definitely very important, because a lot of people from different communities have their own interpretation of what mental illness is. And for example, like I said earlier, you know, a lot of people relate with their cultural as well as their religious beliefs, and that guides them through their life. And I think for us, it's just about understanding and, you know, doing a bit of like a cultural formulation. That's what we do at work. So basically we try to understand what's happening for them. Does their culture sort of accept what's going for them, and how can we support them? And yeah, so just being mindful of cultures and asking all the right questions, and also being respectful is the most important mm-hmm. thing. So respecting people's understandings as well as their interpretations of mental illness. Yeah.
And do you find that if you are talking to these young people's parents, that you have to frame the help you're trying to provide in a certain way to overcome that cultural barrier and the stigma that they may sort of perceive around healthcare?
Yeah, no, definitely. So what we do is, you know, obviously we've got a lot of young people and their parents have migrated to Australia. So the one thing we do is we get an interpreter. So an interpreter is there to just sort of create that bridge where there's a lack of communication, because obviously we use a lot of acronyms. It's quite mental health based, and it's difficult for someone who speaks English quite well already to understand. So when you tie in someone from like that speaks a different language and struggles with, you know, speaking English, that makes it so much more difficult. So interpreting services is one of the ways we speak to them. We also take out pamphlets in their languages, and that sort of speaks about, for example, if someone has bipolar, we'll take out a pamphlet in Arabic that talks about bipolar, just so that the families can read and understand that. And yeah, I guess what we do as clinicians is we're very mindful of the things we say, and we always try to word it in a way families try to understand. And it's all about being very calm, very patient, and answering their questions.
That makes a lot of sense. That's really insightful. Thank you for that.
No problem.
Cool. Moving on to our next segment. So we're going to talk about services and accessibility. So what services were available to you when you were younger, and were they effective if you did have any? And so was it socially acceptable to seek help?
I'm going to be honest. When I was young, I didn't sort of dive deep into services, so I can't really speak on the services that were available. I would take a guess and say Headspace. Headspace has been around for quite some time. Then there's Lifeline for the kids. I think what we did have back in school was we had a counsellor. Mm. So I didn't access the counsellor, but I know that they were accessible to us as students.
So what advice do you have for young people like myself who are trying to navigate through the daunting process of engaging with services?
Yep. Okay. So what I would definitely recommend is speaking out to like a close friend or someone who you trust, as well as speaking to a counsellor. I'm sure all schools in this day and age, you would have a counsellor or someone that can help you navigate through the system, as well as there is other services available such as Kids Helpline. They're accessible 24/7, and there's Headspace. They're also available for online chatting as well as over the phone, and of course Lifeline if you feel like there is an imminent risk to, you know, your life, or if you feel like you're in danger, or if you feel like you can't keep yourself safe. We also have YAT, so we sort of work closely with YAT. So YAT is sort of a crisis sort of service where they provide sort of advice, feedback, and sort of direction in which pathway you can take. Those are some supports that I can think of.
Cool, thank you so much for that.
Yeah, no problem.
On to the final segment. What do you want in the future to prevent mental health stigma from perpetuating? So is there any like specific programs or policy changes, or the role of parents? Is there anything that you'd like kind of change for the future?
Yeah. So I think for the future, what I would want is just to speak out about it more often. So within my workplace, I'm a part of the cultural responsive group. So me and a few others, we work together in how to best support our patients, how to, you know, whether it be interpreting, how we can improve those services, whether it be providing pamphlets, making sure it's accessible in all different languages, because right now it's only the popular languages that are out. So those sort of things. I think what I would also do is definitely change happens within school, and unfortunately, that is when a lot of mental illnesses start to emerge. It is between the ages of 18 to 25, unfortunately, but that's just the facts. So, you know, making sure that schools are touching on, you know, mental illnesses and just providing education to the students, just so that they're aware of what's happening with them, because a lot of our young people come to us and they sort of don't understand what's happening within themselves or within their body, and they just start to feel anxious. Yeah, so just normalizing that, as well as, you know, this is a bit controversial, but I think bettering the mental health system, you know, as someone who's worked as a nurse for 3 years, I think whenever we have a young person in crisis, you know, emergency departments don't sort of take our patients seriously just because their airway is not occluded or they're not, you know, their leg's not amputated. And I do understand it's based off triage and who's important, but I think, unfortunately, mental health patients do sort of get pushed to a side and they don't get the care they need until they are at risk to not only themselves but also other people. But I think we need to continue to have more conversations about that, because that's sort of like a systemic issue. Yeah, I don't know if that answers your question.
It does, yeah. Thank you for that. That was very thoughtful, and it seems like education is kind of like the key to breaking down the stigma for mental health.
As a mental health nurse, do you have like a self-care routine? Because obviously it's a very heavy job that not many people can do. Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, it's so funny because everyone tells me it's such a heavy job, but I actually don't think it's heavy. And that's probably, maybe that's why I'm still a mental health nurse. Maybe that's why I'm still in it. But in terms of, like, what I do as self-care, so, you know, outside of work, you know, just going to the gym, hanging out with friends, watching my TV shows. And I think what's most important is having like a work-life balance. So just making sure that you're getting up to stuff. And I'm not going to sit here and act like my patients don't affect me. You know, some of their experiences are really sad, and unfortunately some patients just don't get better. Eventually they do get better, but sometimes it takes a little longer for some patients. And, you know, you start to ask yourself questions like, why isn't this treatment working? Why isn't that treatment not working? And it definitely does take a toll on you, because you start to feel for these patients, and some of them are like only 17 years old, you know, it just really affects you, because you look at the trajectory of life and you think, oh my God, like, I really do hope they get better. They've got so much life ahead of them. Just going back to what I was saying, it definitely does affect me. I'm not going to act like, you know, it's all happy days, rainbows and cupcakes, because it really isn't. But yeah, just going back to what you were asking, I think just finding time for yourself, you know, engaging in the hobbies. We all have different hobbies. We all like different things. And just grounding yourself and just doing things you enjoy in your days off. That's all I can think about.
Self-care is so important.
Exactly. Yeah.
And another question that I had was, did you feel that there was a sort of mental transition period when you went from general nursing to psych nursing, in terms of the mindset you would have to adopt when approaching your work?
Yeah, oh my God, that was super hard. So when I was a general nurse, you don't really get to talk to patients much. It's sort of like, here's your Panadol, you know, lift up your leg, you know, it's good to elevate your leg, it reduces swelling. So it's like cause and effect. So if there's a problem, there's always a solution. And what I learned, and I learned this quite quick, that when I became a psych nurse, there's not always going to be a solution. Like schizophrenia, some people get schizophrenia, and unfortunately, we don't have answers. You know, some family members get it, some family members don't. So I think for me, what the biggest and most difficult transition was always having an answer and a solution to something, and then coming into psych nursing, and unfortunately there's not always a solution. So that's something that definitely, you know, made me think quite a bit. And in terms of like medications, the medications are super different. We're not prescribing general medications. They're very specific, and every patient has a specific medication that works for them. So let's just say you had an ACL tear and you had surgery, right? The surgeon's probably going to deal with it in like a systematic way, and everyone's probably going to get the same treatment where it's like you go to rehab, you take 6 weeks to heal, you're on crutches. It's quite systematic, and you sort of know what to expect at what stage if you break a leg. But with mental health, unfortunately, if someone has, like, for example, a psychotic episode and you provide them with one medication that treats a psychotic episode, it might work for one person, but that's not going to work for the other person. So it's like it's not a one size shoe fits all, if that sort of makes sense. Some people get side effects to some medications, some people don't. So sometimes we always have to make changes to their medications, and sometimes it takes a while to, or sometimes even months to find the right medication. So it's quite complex. It's very nuanced, and yeah, it's quite different in that sense. So that's what I had to get used to, is working in the unknown.
Yeah. And would you say that having to get used to working in the unknown in a non-systematic way, where you don't know the answers or the direct straightaway answers to every problem, did that have any impact on your attitudes towards your daily non-professional life? So dealing with uncertainty, for example, because of the fact that within your work now you have to deal with uncertainty or not having a clear answer so often.
Yeah, I wouldn't probably say, I don't think it dragged into my non-professional life, but it definitely did impact quite a lot of us in our professional life. We did have one patient who was just not responding to medications. You know, his mum was a single mother and she was working overtime, and a lot of us became very involved with this patient because they were with us for quite a period of time, and a lot of us became quite agitated with, you know, some of the doctors and the treatment process, and we got a bit frustrated. And, you know, we had a lot of questions about, why don't we try this medication? Why don't we try that? Why don't we try this solution? And I think a lot of us became quite involved with the patients, and we feel quite passionate about them and we want to help them.
And just a question from me. So a lot of parents say that they don't really have a favourite child, but I think that's a lie. Do you have like a favourite patient? And can you tell me more about that patient?
And a favourite type of patient.
Yeah. So It's we try not to, there's a thing called countertransference and transference within nursing, and you know, you are definitely, every patient has a different personality type, and you know, some patients generally, at the end of the day, we're all people, we all get on with some people more than others, and that's just what it's like with patients. I'm not going to lie, we've had some patients who when they're discharged from us, we're like, no, we really enjoyed your company, and you know, you have patients who, you know, they just prefer to just get on with their day. It's just their personality style. They don't want to talk with us. They just want us to give them medications, and they just want you out of their house. So I think in those instances, it's hard to develop that therapeutic relationship with those patients, where some of them are like, let's go soccer, let's play this, because we do have fun with the patients. Yeah. So I think those patients are probably, unfortunately, probably more favourable than others. But I think it just depends on the level of engagement.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. So thank you so much, Sahur, for sharing your experiences today. It's been really insightful hearing your thoughts on cultural appropriateness and mental health stigma, a lot of things. It's been really wonderful and inspiring to hear from you today, and also a bit of an eye-opener, I think, for all of us. So tune in next episode, where we will be discussing climate change and reflecting on our Youth Sustainability Forum. Until then, take care of yourselves and take care of your friends.
Bye!